This is the Energizing India Podcast.
My name is Ravin Mirchandani, and on this program, we feature conversations with key protagonists, industry leaders, and opinion makers creating a narrative on how to facilitate faster adoption of electric mobility in India. Today, we go back to the OEM sector, but we examine electric cars from a very different and unique perspective, as we are featuring a bold and adventurous company that is designing an Indian-made premium EV, which will only be available to luxury hotels and tourism fleets. The company is also designing and will manufacture its own battery packs. Already funded by Groupe RN of France, their first batch of 2,500 limited edition cars will only be available in Bangalore and Delhi as a start. The car is set to be powered by a single electric motor that it claims will go from 0 to 100 kilometers in 5.4 seconds. Energized by a 96 kilowatt hour battery pack, which it says will have a range of 500 kilometers. We speak today with Dhaval Khullar, CTO of Praveg Dynamics. Dhaval, welcome to the program.
Hey, Robin, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Dhaval, I hope next time you'll come to the studio in Pune rather than doing this on Zoom. We've been doing a lot of research on your company, and you're a very interesting bunch of folks. Founded in 2011 in Jaipur to work on EV technology way before anybody in India was even looking at it seriously. I mean, you had Elon Musk, who started in 2008 to 2009. The only other person who was doing anything EV in India around that time was Naveen Munjal from Hero Motors. Everything else came afterwards. What prompted you to dive into electric vehicles so early when it would have been almost impossible to get anyone's attention, leave alone funding?
Many, many factors were involved back then. So I think to answer this question in a better way, I think I should tell you more about myself as well. First, you know, what is my background, how we got into, how the automotive bug bit us. So when I was a small child, I used to, like, you know, I always have had a knack for engineering. All things mechanical, all sorts of machineries, they have always interested me. There was a bike, a very famous bike owned by Mr. Jay Leno back then. It's called the Y2K. It's powered by a gas turbine as well. So I got into gas turbines. You know, they are very cool, awesome machines. They can run on any fuel. But again, the limiting factor was the fuel. You need to have the fuel, and you know, they are guzzlers. They consume fuel at a massive rate, and fuel, you know, supply chain issues, quality issues, and then, you know, you have to transport that fuel. And if you are in the middle of nowhere, then you have to build a supply chain just to, you know, transport that fuel around. In fact, a very similar problem is faced by, you know, not just us, all armed forces in the world. You have a base station at a remote location, and then to run one vehicle, you are running seven more vehicles just for the logistics of that fuel. And coming to electricity is something which is relatively more straightforward with respect to logistics. And even if you can't transport it, it's much modular when it comes to producing it. You know, you can produce it using solar, you can produce it using nuclear, you can produce it, you know, if you have a river flowing next door, you know, you can produce electricity. So it's a universally accepted thing.
So you decided to go into EVs because it's a universal form of energy, but my question was about why so early, and what was the impact of being in this industry so early when I'm sure nobody took you seriously, right? Even 4 years ago when we were talking to ICE companies about EVs, they used to laugh us out of the room. So how was that? Well, first, why did you choose to go in so early, and how was that whole experience from 2011 to 2018 or 19 when you reincorporated yourselves in Bangalore, moving from Jaipur and got down to a focused business plan in the direction of this car and battery that you're making?
Okay, so back in 2011, you are absolutely right, like nobody took us seriously. But the key problem in electrics is the batteries or the energy storage. And back in 2011, this was a big problem. Most commercial batteries you could find were either lead acid or nickel cadmium and stuff like that. Lithium ion was around, but back then the costs were super high. So to be very honest, like back in 2011, the prototypes that we built, they were not fully electric. because, you know, we simply could not figure out an energy storage system which is light enough and good enough for a reasonable range and performance. And for the record, one thing we set out in stone in the very early days is that we'll never make a boring product. We'll never make a product which is, you know, kind of runs, but it's slow, it's not boring, you know. In other words, never a washing machine on wheels. So ultimately, somewhere along the timeline between then and now, we figured all of these things out, started working on. So one of our the better prototypes is called the Extinction Mark One. You may have seen it. It's a white prototype, and it's called Extinction because we have been following a evolutionary theme when it comes to how we name our prototypes.
So all the advertising now for EVs that are launched says range of up to 300 or 350 or 495 or 500. For our average listeners who are not from the EV industry and who want to understand what that means, what are the different conditions that impact the range of an EV, and why is this an issue? Why is, you know, kitna deti hai is the story in the ICE industry, and you know, when an average is 10, it's usually 9.5 to 10.5 kilometers a liter. Yet in an EV, there's so many variations, isn't there? There's temperature, there's other road conditions. So what are the things that impact the range of the vehicle?
Okay, so there are four key fundamentals which impact the range of any vehicle, be it electric or ICE engine. So the first they come under the category of road loads. One is the rolling resistance of your tires. So no matter what road surface you are rolling your wheels on, there is a certain resistance. This resistance changes if you have very good smooth roads. This value is very, very low. The standard value for this is like most modern tires today will have a value of 0.008 for the on tarmac. But as you go on, say, gravelly roads or sand, this value rises. So the surface on which you are driving, it has a huge impact on the range. Second variable is the aerodynamics. And aerodynamics is a cubic function. So like if you increase your speed by 2x, your resistance will increase as a cubic function. And the third variable is the gradient. Gradient means like if you're driving up a hill. So, you know, of course, you have to fight gravity as well, along with the rolling resistance and aerodynamic loads. Now, the fourth variable is the temperature, as you said. This is more related to human comfort. So the hotter it gets or the colder it gets, you'll end up spending energy to either cool your cabin down or to heat it up. So yeah, these are the four fundamental variables.
So you talked about smooth versus gravelly roads. So smooth road means longer range or lesser range?
Smooth roads mean better range.
So all of the startups in India have chosen to make a two-wheeler or a three-wheeler, and yet you've gone for a very difficult segment.
Right.
The Indian automotive sector, you know, the Tata Group has only just launched its first three or four electric vehicles, and the global majors are bringing theirs, which evidently are retrofits as well. There's very few cars that are, you know, from a zero base, like the Kia EV6 or the Hyundai Ioniq. Not retrofits, but started from scratch. You attacked a very difficult part of the market. So what problem are you addressing as Praveg in the four-wheel section? Because you're attacking a very unique niche within the market, which is not private ownership, but fleet owners for a very targeted segment of travel and hotels. What's the problem that you think that you're addressing that'll make you successful?
There are multiple problems we are trying to solve here, in fact. So the first problem is building the necessary capabilities. And in other words, it comes down to building the necessary technologies, if I may. For example, the batteries that we manufacture today, we have energy densities of north of 180 watt-hour per kilograms. And now, in order to build technology, you know, it takes research and development to build technology. And as a result, so, you know, I'm pretty sure you might have observed a trickle down effect across the automotive domain already. It's already happening. So as an example, if you look at a Mercedes-Benz S-Class 10 years before, it will have technologies which, you know, nobody else had at that point of time. But eventually, over time, those technologies have trickled out. And, you know, like you buy a Hyundai i20, for example, today, it will have most of those features. And already. So Now, one thing to have a good technology tree is to start with a difficult, more difficult problem. Why do I say building a more premium vehicle is a more difficult problem is because A, the costs are higher and the expectations of the end users are also higher. You know, like, of course, our customers will hate us if we end up building a vehicle which does not keep the promise of the specified range, or, you know, does not ride like a boat, or, you know, the ride is too hard, or is not comfortable in general.
So what price point will you be coming at? Is it 25 lakh, 40 lakh? Where are you pegging yourselves?
I'll say that it will be hovering around the 40.
And when will the car be available?
Okay, so expect the car to experience the car physically, you know, around first quarter of 24.
Sorry, I'm interested, Dhaval, how much of this car have you guys actually designed yourself, and how much is commercial off the shelf stuff? I mean, have you designed everything right down to the drivetrain, the motor, the chassis, or have you had lots of support to do that and you focused on the battery pack and the motor? Where's the key competences to ensure you're delivering exactly what you've talked about, safety, drive experience, range?
Right. So to answer this, so we build and engineer most of the vehicles. And of course, there are certain components like drivetrains. You know, today we are not building our own drivetrains, because if we start doing that, we can definitely start doing that, but it's a very long development cycle. You know, you build prototypes, you validate them, then you figure out how to mass produce them, etc., etc. And so today we are building our own battery packs for sure. We are building our chassis systems. We are engineering the entirety of the interiors, the exteriors, the aerodynamics, suspension. Suspension systems are in fact one of our key strengths. And I don't know if you have seen our previous prototypes, but some of them are, you know, like hardcore off-road machines. Like, one of them is actually built, like, you can go to Dakar Rally, if you pass the scrutiny and, you know, survive. And so yeah, suspension is something which is one of our key strengths. And yeah, and then there are certain subsystems, like, you know, for example, it really does not make sense for Pravek today to, you know, build our own airbags, for example. So there are certain areas which we have a supply chain for certain areas, like, say, the door seals. And in these areas, we, you know, co-work with these guys. So then airbags is one area. Then there are certain wheel bearings we don't make ourselves, wheels as well, tires also. So yeah, there are some parts which we co-work with our vendor base.
Okay. There's been a question ringing around my head since you set the price of 40 lakhs, so I'm going to put it to you, because we face the same position. We make a quality EV charger. It's not as cheap as a lot of Indian products. It's pegged at a European quality point, but cheaper in terms of the same product. But India doesn't reward that. India rewards the cheapest product. India rewards a Tata Nexon, four-door, no matter which segment you're looking at, because that's the mentality. It's a 0-1 digital game on where is the cheapest product available. So how are you going to overcome that? Or have you just decided not to overcome it and look at exports? Or is it the fact that you're going to be a niche player making just a few thousand units a year? So long as you cover them, you've covered your expenses and costs and you will be profitable. So it doesn't really matter. How do you plan to overcome the one weakness of price?
Although I fully agree with you that, you know, like, it's a bit challenging for the masses to see, like, we are more conditioned to look at the short-term prices versus the long-term price. Sorry. And one of the beauties of our vehicles is that, you know, although the initial cost is X, and to be honest, you know, we are really not bad. We are, in fact, I truly believe that we are at par or in fact better with, say, if you end up importing an EV from outside. Price-wise, we are for sure better than that. And of course, building most of the parts locally, it definitely helps that cause. And as an example, like, more than 70% of the vehicle volume wise is built locally today, and we are working hard to, you know, increase this figure as the time goes by. And one thing is, since you also mentioned, you touched the topic of volumes as well, so the immediate project that we are working on is set as per annum we'll be making 2500 of these cars.
So I have a question, Dhaval. You know, we know that a number of people from the automotive industry listen to our podcast. And when you said that number, 2,500 vehicles in your first run, I'm sure a number of them would be incredulous of how Prevaig would break even or make money at such a small volume. So can you talk a little bit about that? How are you going to be profitable at low volumes?
When it comes to profitability, so here we have to look at the overall business model. So there are multiple reasons we have chosen to, you know, push strongly towards fleet utilization. So the number one reason is, like, you know, it is very much possible for us to, you know, say sell the vehicle to someone and, you know, just use it. And of course, there are people in India, you know, India has a lot of rich people, you know, who can very well afford our vehicles, as long as, you know, they like it and, you know, it's good enough for them. So one is the accessibility of the vehicle is much higher. You know, it's not just locked. A vehicle is not like just locked on to me or you. You know, like much more people can utilize it. Even though the initial cost is slightly higher than the rest, but the value proposition is one of the beauties of electric vehicles is the running costs are super low. And to give you a comparison, so the present prototype that we have, it's in fact a bit old now, the Mark 1. It is pretty close to a BMW 7 Series when it comes to the weight or the size or the comfort levels. Now, a BMW 7 Series will cost you around 12 to 15 rupees per kilometer, assuming it's a diesel. And the same vehicle, similar performance levels, in fact better. This prototype costs us, if we charge it, you know, like slowly, like off at our home. But yeah, in such a situation, like the vehicle costs us like 90 paisa per kilometer to run.
Okay, very big difference.
It's a massive difference.
Okay, but that's breaking even for the customer. But how do you keep your cost base as an automotive company low enough to be such a low volume manufacturer and still have all of the overheads of manufacturing a full vehicle, right? What's the secret there, Dhaval?
Okay, so to be honest, it's not, you know, the business model is not built to, you know, that we... So assume today we manufacture 2,500 cars and next year, you know, we are rolling in money. It does not work like that. It's more of long term, and as a result, the vehicles are also built to last for a long time. And, you know, like within the business model, we also have areas like, you know, revenue sharing. For example, it's one of the models that we have with our you know, customers who would be fleet operators, and that helps. And one good thing is that the vehicles keep generating revenue over a long, long time. It is kind of, you know, it's kind of comparable to, say, if you were Airbus and you manufactured an Airbus A320, you know, this aircraft cost, like, if I'm not wrong, north of 30 million per unit. But, you know, at the end of the day, you end up paying, what, 5,000 to 6,000 rupees for a flight between, say, Bangalore to Pune. And, but the beauty is, these aircrafts, they, you know, let's say Vistara, let's talk about Vistara. They don't have their aircraft just standing around. They want them to be working as long as possible. And
it's about utilization.
Exactly. Okay. And the aircraft are also, you know, engineered to be able to do this. And it's a, you know, in fact, this is very, like, in fact, we are very similar to the aircraft industry when it comes to how we build our vehicles.
Okay. So let's talk about your batteries then, Dhaval. You have a very interesting cell form factor. You're going to import the cells from South Korea. Brilliant. Not China. Very happy to hear that. Your pack's going to consist of 5,000 cells. So very similar to, in fact, the Tesla design, where they have 18,000 such cells in the thousands and thousands of cells, in fact, in a car. And your cell pack in the end is going to weigh 500 kgs, which is at the bottom of the car. You're going to be packing your own cells. Tell us about the chemistry you used. Why? What is the form factor that you used and why? How did you work out the 500 kgs? And then finally, most importantly, how are you going to make sure that the fires that are happening in a lot of the Indian designed EVs, which are scooters mostly, will not impact your design in any way?
So with respect to chemistries, we are like pretty flexible when it comes to chemistries. And in fact, chemistries are something which, you know, keep changing with time. And we definitely do not intend to be locked onto one specific chemistry, because, you know, each chemistry will have their own pros and cons. You know, as we speak, you know, on a daily basis, newer and newer chemistries start coming into the picture. So now our battery platform is essentially built to be super flexible. Now inside the battery, there are two major things. Of course, there are lots and lots of minor things to take care of. But with respect to the chemistry and how you manufacture your packs, one thing to take care of is how exactly do you assemble battery packs. And the one of the reasons why assembling a battery pack after you have figured out the chemistry is because you have to meet safety standards. And one of the biggest challenges, in fact, the tolerances, especially if you are aiming for super high energy densities, because you know you have a lot of cells which are relatively very small compared to the rest of the vehicle, and you have thousands of them, and each one has to go at a specific place within very tight tolerances. Then each one is, you know, interconnected with the rest. It's talking to battery management systems. It's talking to, you know, it's sending energy from here to there. If you are fixed on a form factor and the chemistries keep getting better, you know, it still is easier to, you know, integrate them. And we make sure that our battery management systems are capable enough and they are future-proof enough to, you know, account for these changes. So tomorrow, if we upgrade our chemistry, and you know, it's not about that today. If we lock our chemistry, we'll, you know, for the next 5 years, we'll keep pushing the same chemistry. If we can do better, if we can get better cells tomorrow, we'll be happy to integrate them. But in the back end, we are making sure that it does not take us in year to integrate those. We should be able to, you know, just flap them on, code the BMS to accept those, and we are good to go.
What about protection from fires in terms of what's been happening in the Indian market? I've spoken to a lot of people. Some people have talked about summer temperatures make a difference. Some people said it doesn't make a difference at all. It's all about your battery pack quality of your architecture design and the likes. What are your opinions on why they're happening and how you protected your own vehicle against that?
So the three primary reasons or the three primary probable causes for a lithium ion battery fire, no matter what the chemistry is, would be, the first one would be, as you said, temperatures. The second one would be cell abuse, which could be, you know, thanks to an improperly functioning battery management system, for example. And the third variable would be manufacturing defects. And these cells are, you know, truly state of the art, and they are like really, really packed. I'm pretty sure, like, you know, most of the listeners here would have seen videos of what is inside a cylindrical cell. It's a jelly roll with various layers, and one contaminant somewhere, even if it is not conducted, you know, over a period of time can, you know, spark a fire. So now, having understood the three primary causes, you know, of course, these three primary causes can have their own sub causes, but to keep things simple, you know, that's three causes.
You talked about BMS, we talked about charging. There are many charging protocol standards around the world. There's CCS1 in America, CCS2 globally, there's GBT in China, there's Shademo in Japan. When you started, there was nothing like this in 2011. So in 2018, you would have had to make a decision on what charging protocol you were going to go down for your car. What did you decide in the end and why?
So we are strongly inclined on a combination of CCS2 and Shademo. Because the reason is, like, of course, so it's kind of similar to, the fight is kind of similar to, like, the Apple iPhone charger versus the USB-C versus the USB-A. You know, you have a charger, you know, similar amounts of electricity are flowing in, you know, similar fundamentals, but, you know, a charger is right there, but you cannot use it. So a combination of these two enable us to utilize the overall infrastructure better. In fact, I think infrastructure is, you know, one key thing for the overall adoption of electric vehicles. The reasons I say that is, so many people don't realize this. Many people take for granted that, you know, whatever power lines we have coming to our homes, but laying down these power lines is, you know, A, super expensive, and B, it's time consuming.
So this is probably the only car in the world that can do both. So I want to understand how, because, I mean, no matter which car you look at in the world, right, from the Polestar through the Audi, they're built only for CCS. So they're two different connectors, CCS and Shademo. Does that mean your car has two different charge ports and you can approach it with Shademo and you can approach it with CCS2? And then you have, how does the BMS interface with these two different charge protocols? Or are you saying that you will export either a Shademo version or a CCS2 version and you'll make a CCS2 version for India?
Okay, so to answer this, our cars would not have two charging ports. It will be a single charging port, but there's some black magic in the back end, but this charging port will accept both.
Okay, so the charging port will be a universal CHAdeMO CCS2 charging port. Now that's very interesting. So you're clearly building a car for export because there's no CHAdeMO in India. There's a couple of Nissan Leafs, some I think not even registered in India, working in labs. I'm interested. I want to probe this a little bit more. What's going on here?
Okay, so to be honest, like, you know, we would be happy to export our vehicles as well. And like whatever engineering decisions we take as well, you know, we are not limiting ourselves that, okay, we are just building this car for India, so let's just stick with the Indian regulations. And to be honest, you know, like if you look at regulations for India and if you look at regulations for Europe, you know, there's a lot of difference. And to achieve those, you'll have to do a lot of back and forth in the back end. So right now the approach is that, we are more than happy to export the vehicles, but India is the top priority for us.
Excellent. It'll be interesting to see how you achieve that. Most automotive companies run away from any kind of complexity to keep it as simple as possible to avoid any failure points. So I'd personally be quite keen to see and hope you'll be successful with this. A couple of rapid fire questions. Your company has an interesting name, Praveg. What does it mean?
Praveg is a Sanskrit word. It essentially means ultimate achievable velocity.
Excellent. Sanskrit word as well. Beautiful. Also, you've always talked about taking back control. And that's in some ways a mission for Praveg. What do you mean by taking back control?
Okay, so by taking back control, we mean multiple things. One is, like going away from the cycle of everything being centralized. So, for example, you know, we are building a fleet. And you have other fleets in the world, Uber, Ola, for example. Do you really know what ends up happening with your data? You know, there's a centralized server somewhere. So in our case, we are building even, you know, these application layers in a way which are more decentralized. I don't know what car you own today, but no matter what car it is, like, you know, the days of tinkering with your own car or fixing your own car or, you know, serviceability or you know, these things are going away. We definitely want to bring these variables back into the picture, and we definitely do not want our business models to be. So, for example, most OEMs, for various reasons, most of the revenues are made in the after sales, and you know, the parts, the supply, everything is, you know, it's finely controlled. So we don't want to do that. We don't want to be reliant on, you know, say we have a service station, you have to drive your car to that service station, get it fixed. And in fact, you know, why not? Because, you know, one of the beauties of electric vehicles is there is much, much lower things which can go wrong.
Very little things that you need to do. That's true. You talked about Ola and Uber. Ola has teased its electric car. They're moving quite fast. You've talked about your own launch in the first quarter of 2024. How do you think Ola is going to impact your own plans? There's another non-automotive company that's decided that it wants to make a car and kind of in a niche space as well, just like yourselves.
I wish the best to Ola, but I honestly know very little, but what I do know is, like, it's a small car. Ola is definitely not building a large vehicle like we are. And certain challenges I see are when it comes to, you know, like, so one thing I think is holds true is you cannot overnight transition a city or a state or a country to electric. Because say imagine tomorrow Mumbai had, you know, 10,000 more electric cars suddenly, magically. Now how do you charge them? Where do you charge them? And either you make the vehicles capable enough of accepting fast charge. In that situation, maybe you just, each vehicle is waiting in a line just for 10 minutes. You know, it plugs in for 10 minutes fast charge and then it goes. Now the second variable is, if you have a small car, you will definitely have a small range, which means you need to access this charging infrastructure daily, maybe twice a day. And in our case, in fact, this was one of the key decision making factors. So in most cases on an average, a vehicle would not travel more than 220 to 250 kilometers. And if we have a range of 500, we are visiting a charging station once every 2 days. So, you know, our reliance or dependency on how much infrastructure is there is still lower. Versus if we build a vehicle which needs to visit that same charging infrastructure twice a day, then, you know, there are many drawbacks. There is downtime, there is congestion, you need to keep up with the infrastructure, etc.
Excellent. So Dhaval, I have one final question for you, and we ask this question to all the talent that comes on our show. And I apologize for the frivolous nature of this question, but it always brings out such a beautiful pointed answer that we choose to always press on with it. And the question is this: if you were to be able to be Prime Minister of India for one day, just one day, and could make any decision you wanted for faster adoption of electric vehicles in India, what would that decision be?
Okay, so I think the adoption of electric, one of the bottlenecks is bringing in technology. Like, there are certain elements, like as I said, like, we are trying to build most of the vehicles by volume, more than 70% by volume in India. But the last 20% is the most difficult. And today, when it comes to, say, if you are importing something or if you are importing a technology built for electric vehicles, for whatever person, maybe to reverse engineer or to actually implement, then the import procedures are, the procedures could be smoother, faster. Like, we lose a lot of time in, paperwork today. So I'll try to figure out a solution to that.
True. Excellent. That's a great answer. Dhaval, you're obviously a very intelligent man, and it's great to see that you've chosen to use your intelligence and talents by creating a company and being an entrepreneur rather than disappearing into the dark abyss of a large company where you know your ideas would clearly not be listened to because they're so radical. You've chosen to be a dewdrop on a leaf rather than a drop of water in the ocean. Your ideas are brilliant. What you're trying to do with your car is amazing. From all of us at Energizing India, we do hope that Praveg is going to be incredibly successful. Look forward to seeing your first car launch and driving it also one day. And if you ever need to do any homologation testing on a charge station, feel free to drop into the Energizing India studios and use our very large DC hypercharging station here to test your car. Fantastic. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Ravi. Cheers.
I'm your host for this episode, Ravin Mirchandani. But I would not be here without the amazing Energizing India podcast team. Onkar, our podcast director and the man who makes it all happen in the end, much like a big fat grand Indian wedding, bringing together the research, data and attention to details, all in the timelines to get the next episode out on time. Sri Vikram, our podcast co-host and head of research, and Sunil, who along with me is executive producer of our program. The Energizing India podcast is an Ador Digitron production, giving a voice to the EV industry in India. If you enjoyed listening to us today, make sure to follow us on whatever platform you are listening on, whether it's Spotify, Apple iTunes, or our own portal, energizingindia.tv. Thank you very much, and see you on the next episode.